It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. The University of Wisconsin system claims to serve 170,000 students. It also employs some 39,000 people. The Board of Regents governs the system, establishing rules and creating policies. 18 people make those decisions. Two of them are students, and one joins us today. Olivia Woodmansey is a UW System Board of Regents student member. In May, Governor Tony Evers appointed her to a two-year term, and she joins us from Wisconsin Public Radio studios in La Crosse. Olivia, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
When you last came on this program, you were newly appointed, looking for input from UW students on what was important to them. What have you learned?
I've learned several things throughout the year. The biggest one is that challenges come at all times. There's really no planning for what happens in the system. I know issues have been brought forth that I'd never thought they would be being brought to the students. I know something really on their minds right now is the presidential search and making sure that the president of the UW system that is chosen has input from students. I'm pleased to say that the non-traditional student regent, Tori, was appointed to that committee, but that throughout my tenure, I'm really ensuring that students know that that's not the end of the line, that they can still attend open forums and visit other events to ensure that they have a voice in the selection process.
What are other top priorities people have voiced and that you've identified are important to advocate for your fellow students?
Of course, there's a lot of issues happening right now in the system. I know that the non-academic misconduct or the freedom of expression policy is a policy that students feel very passionate about. I have also spoken with students who just want better representation throughout the system and to ensure that their voice is being heard. Student Representatives, which is a University of Wisconsin system body, is an entity that's trying to do that and so looking to really strengthen that. And then also just ensuring that on a campus-to-campus basis, their voice is heard with budget cuts that are happening throughout the system and tuition being frozen for so many years. They want to make sure that those support services, like mental health services and other student support services, are still being available to them on campus and that the resources that are available to on campuses are known to them. And those are some of the biggest concerns that I've seen throughout the students at the system.
And we're talking with Olivia Woodmansey, who is a member of the UW System Board of Regents. And now is the time for you to join the conversation. You can call 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for her? What do you want to know about the board's positions or goals? What suggestions might you have? You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Olivia, let's talk about the Board of Regents meeting tomorrow. It's the seventh one this year. The agenda is not very long. What business that happens tomorrow do you think people should know about?
I think it's really important just to know that the focus for tomorrow's meeting is research. And the reason that that's important for everyone to know is because it shows how much the system values research and how much the board wants to know about what research is being done and how students have an impact not only on their campus but also throughout their community when research is taking place. I think that really ties back to our All in Wisconsin initiative that the system and the board is promoting throughout my tenure.
Are the regions looking to change how much research is done on campuses?
I don't think it's as much about change as it is about promotion and just letting people know that all of this work is happening on a campus-to-campus basis. We should promote it more. We should really make sure that throughout the system, community leaders, the legislature knows how much work is being done by our students because it's really phenomenal work that's happening if you look at it.
And tomorrow's meeting also includes updates on searches, looking for new chancellors at UW-Green Bay and UW-Stout. So what are you looking for in new chancellors at those schools?
I think it's really important that we address the needs of the campus. Something that I've realized is that while we are a system, what makes us incredible is that our diversity in the system. So really making sure that we choose chancellors who highlight the individual needs of each campus and to do that each region. I know the regents on the search and screen committees as well as the faculty and staff members on those committees have been working towards forums and other ways where they can get the word out and get the public's opinion on what they are looking for in a chancellor, and I think that's important that we keep that in mind throughout our searches.
And you're looking at that as kind of a smaller, more individualized aspect, but UW System President Ray Cross has announced his plans to retire, so there's a search there for a new president of the entire system. What is different about trying to fill that position? What will you be looking for in someone to lead the whole system?
I definitely believe that it's not just one characteristic or one aspect. I think we need to highlight some of the aspects of President Cross's role that he's done really well. I think he's done really well at getting engaged in the community. He's been very nonpartisan, being able to speak to whoever in the state down in Madison about issues, things like that. I think we need to enhance those characteristics and then also build upon some of the current issues that I would say the university system is facing, ensuring that diversity and inclusion is a top priority in our next presidential search, and then also that they're able to engage actively with what's happening right now in terms of being able to just get around the state, get around the system. I think you can't really lead a system until you've been to different campuses. That's something President Cross has made his priority and something that I hope the next president of the system also makes their priority.
Olivia Woodmansee is a UW System Board of Regents student member joining us from our studios in Eau Claire. And we're talking about priorities she's laying out as part of her role on the Regents. Earlier, Olivia, you mentioned the fact that students are concerned about campus speech. We know that State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss joined our program last month to discuss this. He supports the UW system establishing policies that require mandatory discipline for students who disrupt free speech.
And the idea that someone can go to a speaker and shout them down, thus preventing students from hearing, from challenging, from questioning, is really what concerns me. And it seems like that is becoming far too common as a way for us in society to deal with someone we disagree with.
Olivia, what do you think of the UW system's proposed campus free speech policies?
I personally don't agree with it. I think that it's a policy that could use a bit of tweaking just in terms of who it serves, looking at who it would specifically target and who's most vulnerable to the policy. Also looking in terms of what the policy says. It's very vague language. And I know that's something that people don't agree with. At the November or the October board meeting, we voted to approve the scope statement. I was one of the few regents who voted no to approve that scope statement just because holistically I don't believe with what the policy stands for. And I know that several people have reached out to not only myself but the board's office to speak their concerns. And I think it's important as a board that we listen to those concerns and take them into consideration because we serve the people of the system. And so we have to make sure that we're taking them into account every step of the way.
So this was not just something that is a personal opinion of yours. You've also heard from students who say, we don't really support this right now.
Of course, I want to make sure that with my votes come that student backing, come it's not just my voice at that table, it's students from across the system, it's those who feel they can reach out to me, it's those who maybe don't reach out to me, and it's my job to reach out to them. So I ensure that when I'm voting on a policy that's so contentious like this, I take in both sides and also listen to the rationale and the majority of students who have spoken about this, and faculty and staff for that matter as well, have disagreed with it, and I think it's important we take that into consideration.
Olivia, we know that you have lots of things ahead of you, from dealing with how student fees can be used to acknowledging some of the enrollment challenges at UW, and certainly we'll probably bring you back to talk about this in the future. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Olivia Woodmansee is a student member of the UW System Board of Regents, and she joined us from Wisconsin Public Radio's studios in La Crosse, laying out her priorities as she moves through the first of her 2 years on the Board of Regents. Up next, we're talking about the future of the Palmyra Eagle Area School District. The system's out of money. Voters went to the polls last night. We learn the latest and talk about what the decision says about rural communities. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. The voters have spoken. The Palmyra Eagle Area School District soon won't exist. Budget problems have racked the rural district in southeast Wisconsin for years. In the spring, voters decided not to give the system more money, and it can't operate after this school year. In July, the school board decided to dissolve, and last night, voters agreed. Folks in Palmyra, we want to hear from you. Do you support dissolving the school district? Is this a last resort for your community? 800-642-1234. Maybe you're a student or a staff member there. What's your perspective? Again, that number is 1-800-642-1234. Rob Menser is Wisconsin Public Radio's rural communities reporter based in Wausau. He's covering the story. Rob, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, Keely. Thank you.
Help us break down the results of last night's vote. What did voters decide?
Well, so the bottom line answer is that they said they approved of the school board's decision to dissolve the district. The vote totals being reported this morning show that about 2,200 people voted, and a somewhat narrow majority of 53% of those voters said they favored dissolution. But that is, I feel like the actual results are a little more complex than that. The way to understand this is that this is a district that is geographically quite large, almost all rural, and there are two main towns in it, Palmyra and Eagle. These are separated by Kettle Moraine State Forest, and they're just very different places. Eagle is in Waukesha County. In some ways, it's kind of like ex-urban Waukesha, and the district is very unpopular in Eagle. On the west side of the district is Palmyra, which is in Jefferson County, and that's where the actual middle school and high school are located, and the district is much more popular there. So last night's vote, or yesterday's vote, followed the same pattern that we've seen in earlier votes in the district, where voters in Eagle were heavily in favor of dissolving, and voters in Palmyra were in the majority, were against it. In the end, the pro-dissolution side had more votes.
And yesterday's vote didn't really have the power to change the school board's decision to dissolve. So what was the purpose of this?
Well, so this vote was a grassroots-driven thing. Parents in the Palmyra district had collected the signatures to get this on the ballot on their view that the citizens should have a voice here. It's just an advisory referendum, as you say. My impression is that one purpose of it was to make clear before the dissolution process starts that there's a solid majority of people in Palmyra itself want to keep their school. They have a hope that this will be something that the state Department of Public Instruction will in some way account for or keep in mind as the process proceeds.
I can't help but think that this seems to be a representation of so many other rural, urban, divided districts in our state where, we recognize that schools really create life in some of our small towns. Are those some of the themes that have popped up in this conversation?
No question. So there's been a school in Palmyra since 1896, I think it is. It's the wow. Late 19th century. And so there's a great deal of history there and people who feel like that's part of their community's identity. There's also been a series of referendum votes for tax referendums to pay costs for the school district that have failed. And I think, one person I talked to said that that in some voters' minds, what they have seen is a series of these referendums that went down, the voters did not approve, and then sort of nothing happened. From their perspective, the district continued to operate. And so they maybe thought that, that this wouldn't really be the consequence, but it was.
Mm. Rob Menser is Wisconsin Public Radio's rural communities reporter. He's based in Wausau. I'm Keely Boltina. You can join this conversation. Have you voted on a school funding referendum, maybe in your community? What should we do about struggling districts? 800-642-1234. Rob, what is the greater impact of this disillusion on these communities? What happens?
So it's a bit hard to say. A large number of families already use open enrollment to send their kids to neighboring school districts. That's especially true in Eagle, where it's quite popular to send kids to the Maquonago School District, which is nearby. There's going to be a series of public hearings held by the Department of Public Instruction that will help to, I don't know, gather information or make, you know, help them make, guide their decisions on what will happen. But the expectation is that the students will be sort of apportioned to neighboring school districts as beginning in the next school year.
Voters in April did reject, additional funding. Was there an indication at that time that they understood that a no vote might mean closure?
Yes, there is. I as I said, maybe they didn't sort of really believe that it would happen, but this vote in April was an $11.5 million referendum. It was for operating costs for the school budget. Palmyra Eagle, by the way, is not the only rural school district that has of late has had referendum votes that are not for like building a new gymnasium, but they're for are for actual operating costs. But this was, that's what this was. So when voters turned that down, I think that there was an understanding of what the consequences could be. And as I say, in parts of the district, this is a popular outcome. There are strong proponents of dissolution, especially on the eastern side of the district. So it's not really fair to say that this is like out of the blue. On the other hand, you know how voters are, you know what I mean? They sort of, I think, sort of felt like there could be another way.
Yeah. Actually, we have Adam from Eagle on the line who wants to weigh in to this conversation. Adam, thanks for joining us. What's your perspective?
Sure. I don't have any kids in the school district. I have just a taxpayer and a property owner. When a quarter of all the money goes to different school districts, about from the $12 million budget, there's about $3 million going to a different school district.
You mean because of open enrollment?
Open enrollment. It's just completely unsustainable. The whole idea of having kids in a school district and then just being able to go send them somewhere else, as long as that continues, it's just not a sustainable model for our school district. It's just too much money going out. 75% of the budget basically is left over from what the money that's there. So one way or another, I was going to pay for schools, and it's not against the schools itself. It's just the whole system, it just doesn't work.
Sure. Thanks, Adam, for that perspective. Rob, we hear Adam there saying it's about the numbers. It just doesn't work anymore.
Adam is absolutely right. I mean, his numbers are certainly correct. And there's been an increase in the number of open enrollment, you know, families that use open enrollment. That's right. I mean, that, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? Where because there are these perceived problems in the district, more families choose to use open enrollment to go to McGuanago or Whitewater or whatever neighboring district. And then that in turn creates further financial difficulties within the district.
And now that we know the district will dissolve, where do students, teachers, other staff members go from here?
Some of this depends on what the state decides. Everybody is proceeding on the assumption that the end of the school year will be the end of this district. Students will be apportioned to these neighboring districts, like officially. And that would also mean that all the school districts, employees, teachers, and, janitors and everyone will be simply out of a job. Let me put it this way. I know that there are some residents in Palmyra who hope that there is a way that there's a way to preserve the existence of the school in Palmyra, perhaps under the auspices of a different district. I do not know whether that is a possible outcome or not.
Okay, so we have a lot still up in the air, but we do know that the Palmyra Eagle School District will be going away.
Right.
All right. Rob, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you catching us up on all of this.
All right, thank you.
Rob Mentzer is Wisconsin Public Radio's rural communities reporter. He's based in Wausau. And we're talking about last night's vote that dissolves the Palmyra Eagle Area School District and what this one example can tell us about broader rural communities across Wisconsin. It is Wednesday, and that means a new episode of the Derailed podcast from WPR is available. The podcast focuses on high-speed rail in Wisconsin that doesn't actually exist. And this one tells the story of the trains themselves, like how the state made a deal with a manufacturer, how that deal wound up completely falling apart, and what happened to the trains. You can find Derailed wherever you get your podcasts and at WPR.org. Up next is the news, and then we're going to have a conversation about the black market of vaping. We welcome the Milwaukee County District Attorney, and we want to hear from you. The lines are open now, 800-642-1234. Do you vape? Have you seen a problem with vaping? Are you a physician or a parent or a teacher, and you want to talk about what's going on? Maybe you have used off-market vape products. We want to hear from you. You can email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Police and other law enforcement are cracking down on illegal vaping products. They're connected to health concerns. 1,800 people across the country have gotten sick from vaping-related illness, and more than 36 have died. That's information from the CDC. You're part of this conversation. Do you vape or use e-cigarettes? Have you tried some off-market products? Maybe you opted not to just because you're worried about what could happen. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking about the vaping black market with John Chisholm. He's the Milwaukee County District Attorney, first elected in 2006. He's on the Milwaukee High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Board. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, Keely. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much. And before we get to vaping, though, we do need to talk about a crime that happened a few days ago. There's a victim who says a man threw battery acid on his face after making racist comments. And I wonder, does your office plan to file hate crime charges?
Sure. That's the case that was presented to us late yesterday afternoon by the Milwaukee Police Department, and we anticipate issuing charges sometime today. We're going to be looking very, very closely at first the underlying substantive offenses, and then we'll make a determination whether the facts support a hate crime. But it's obviously a concern to many people, not just in this community, but really around the country right now. And, you know, we've had other incidents in the Milwaukee area, and you've seen them around the country. And what I emphasize is that at least in Wisconsin, there's really two levels that you can look at, and that would be an offense that is issued as a state criminal charge, which I anticipate this one will be. And what we're looking at is an enhancer. So unlike a federal civil rights offense, which is in and of itself a criminal offense if it's motivated by improper criteria, the state crime is an enhancer. It actually adds time to the underlying offense. So if we'll be looking to determine if the crime was committed in whole or in part by the person's belief or perception regarding the individual's race, his religion, his color, any kind of disability, sexual orientation, or national origin. That's the language right out of our statute. So we'll be looking at that very closely.
All right, John, we'll pay attention later today and as the week moves on. Let's shift to our conversation about vaping. This summer, Wisconsin saw a rash of lung illnesses among people using e-cigarettes or other vaping devices. How did Milwaukee County law enforcement respond when people started showing up at hospitals?
So this is an emerging concern. There's no question about it. Unfortunately, it's in the context of a lot of other high priority concerns related to controlled substances. Milwaukee is on pace to have over 400 overdose deaths this year. Most of those are related to opioids and combinations of opioid, fentanyl. The rest of the state is continuing to experience severe methamphetamine problems. So this emerges in the context of what first was recognized as a health issue, and then quickly after that, we started seeing when law enforcement focused on it, you saw, say, a major investigation that resulted in the seizure of significant amounts of illegal vaping products from Kenosha County. And then that was followed a short time later by a seizure here in Milwaukee, on the south side of Milwaukee, of thousands of, again, illegal vaping cartridges, and the seizure of a huge amount of cash. And that's what we're concerned about, is that there's really two approaches. One is just sort of the traditional strict law enforcement. This is an illegal controlled substance. We're going to conduct a criminal investigation. And then there are the problems associated with regulation. And so this falls right in between the two, because the vaping products themselves are often legal, and it's not until they're modified in some way where they can't be regulated, they can't be controlled, that the problems crop up. And so it's not dissimilar to what we've encountered with synthetic marijuana, K2, and the more common sense. Last year we had an incident where people became severely ill because the K2 was contaminated with rat poisoning. So this is the concern right here. It's in that gray area between what is a legal product that is then modified in some way to make it illegal, and it has a unanticipated, unintended health consequence that is a real concern and could potentially lead to criminal liability for the people that engage in that activity.
Let's talk more about that and go to the phones. George from Nina, welcome to the morning show.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. What's your perspective here?
So one of the things that really needs to be discussed is that there's two big separate discussions, one being nicotine vaping, which is the quit smoking tool, and the other is illegal drug use. And they're always talked about in the same breath, to the point where people who are illegally using drugs are getting the law enforcement, and not just the law enforcement, the legislation's attention, to the point where they're trying to ban e-cigarettes, which are the largest quit smoking tool ever made. There's an estimated, I think, 500,000 adult e-cigarette users in the state of Wisconsin that are former smokers.
And George,
base is almost 2,000 people, and these are former smokers. There's some people that are using illegal drugs, and unfortunately, they're they're kind of ruining it for everyone else, and the media just kind of snaps to it and wants to ban everything that's heated with a battery. And unfortunately, that's causing a lot of harm to people that try to quit smoking, or like myself, have quit already and haven't touched a cigarette in years.
Yeah, George, thanks so much. George owns a couple of vape shops and says we need to draw a bright line when we're talking about this.
No, look, I think George is making a absolutely legitimate point. And this is the fine balance that law enforcement has to engage in all the time. And he's absolutely right. There's a distinct process for legal products, right? And that's where I put those in the regulatory framework. So it's no different than selling alcohol or tobacco or any other legal product. You still have to follow the rules and regulations associated with it. And the people that do so are engaged in perfectly legitimate activity. And sometimes the product that they're selling, as George is mentioning, is actually beneficial when compared to the alternative, right? So you're not trying, our approach is not to be overbroad in this. It's really to focus on the people that are engaging in that unregulated behavior that can cause some really significant harm to the community. And most people that are engaged in the business, and this is a broader discussion that this state will have to have in the context of either decriminalizing or legalizing marijuana in the future. You know, do you essentially move from a criminal framework to a regulatory framework? And I believe that we are going to eventually move towards that regulatory framework, but you're always going to have the same problems, just like you have problems with alcohol abuse and you have problems with, as I mentioned before, products like K2 and things like that. There's always going to be an opportunity to abuse the product or abuse the substance, and there will always be people that are willing to pay money to do that.
We're discussing the recent rash of vaping illnesses with Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, also a member of the Washington, D.C.-based Association of Prosecuting Attorneys. I'm Keely Boltina. We wonder what you think law enforcement should know about vaping or prosecuting illegal use. Have you ever purchased vaping products off the street? What did they have over the store options? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. John, what has your office learned from investigating the people who supply these vaping products that contain THC, some that have made people sick?
Well, what we found is because the product is legal, what will happen oftentimes is that a large number of legal products are going to be purchased in the states where they're legal. They're brought into Wisconsin, and then they're modified in some way that is potentially illegal. They could be, you know, modified by putting a controlled substance into the product and sold that way, and it's generally then sold on the black market because it's always a cash-based industry, and it always follows essentially the same trade route that other illegal substances follow. It attracts the same problems, and that is that you become subject to, number one, putting out a harmful product that can't be sourced quickly and stopped if it's causing harm. But the other problem is because it's a cash-based industry, it tends to attract people that are also engaged in illegal activity, like robbing drug dealers. And for example, the recent seizure in the south side of Milwaukee, there was nearly $1 million in cash in this residential neighborhood, and it's far too common in our experience for once that gets known out on the street, those individuals become targets of home invasions and robberies, and that brings a lot of trouble to residential streets that are, you know, like any other residential area, just looking to be safe in their home and send their kids to school and go to work. So that's the concern right there, is that the decision by the people to engage in the illegal activity attracts a lot of other problems and concerns.
So it might not be quite as simple as it appears when we first begin talking about it. John Chisholm stays with us. Our conversation continues. He's the Milwaukee County District Attorney, part of the Milwaukee High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Board. And the line is open. What question do you have for him? 800-642-1234. Do you work in healthcare? Have you seen problems related to vaping with these counterfeit cartridges? What do patients tell you, and what do you hope law enforcement does about it? You can call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Stay with us. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Health officials are following links between vaping and lung injuries, with hundreds of people hurt and some who have died. And state and national investigations are pointing to street products, especially those containing THC, as a major part of the problem, and that includes here in Wisconsin. Do you use off-market vape products? Parents, have you talked to your kids about this? Maybe you're a teacher or an administrator. What's happening with vaping in schools? 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join this conversation. Ask your questions of Milwaukee County's elected District Attorney John Chisholm. He stays with us now. And John, I wonder about the idea that you're looking to file charges against people in the production of these counterfeit vaping products. What movement have you been able to take there?
Well, the approach is not dissimilar to what we would take with any other controlled substance. So in Wisconsin, there's a fundamental distinction between people who possess controlled substances, for example, for personal consumption, and those who possess them with the intention of engaging in distribution and sale. And we always make a distinction on how we approach that. At least in Milwaukee County, we do. And the assumption is with people in possession of the products, we generally are looking towards addressing that underlying addiction issue and using the contact with the system as an ability to assess why the person is having contact with law enforcement, and if there's an underlying issue related to addiction, mental health, issues like that, then we want to address that first. It's a whole different approach for people that are engaged in the commercial distribution of harmful products, because they're basically making the decision that they're going to put their personal profit ahead of the health and welfare of other people. And you certainly see that in the context of heroin and fentanyl distribution, where, you know, every single one of those deaths is a tragedy that affects more than just the family. It impacts on the entire community. So our approach to it is really to make a distinction between the people that are engaged in the unlawful distribution and sale versus those who are experimenting, using, or addicted to controlled substance. You did mention, and I think that's an excellent point, is that the concern is always whether it's a legal product or an illegal product. When it starts filtering down into the high school and the grade school level, then it really becomes a concern, because whether it's legal or illegal for an adult, once a child is exposed to that and starts using that product, it is almost always categorically going to be a problem. And I have spoken to school officials. They're seeing kids as young as you know, second, third grade using vape products.
Wow.
And it's obviously a very serious concern, and that's going to remain a concern whether it's a legal product or an illegal product. But if it's an unregulated substance where you don't know what's in it, and a kid ingests it, the potential for harm is magnified.
Yeah, we have a caller who wants to talk about the issue of vaping and teenagers. Becky from Appleton, what do you want to say in this conversation?
So I have an 18-year-old right now, but when she started vaping when she was 16 and 17, and there was a vape shop that would sell non-nicotine vape things and the actual vape machines, I don't know, to kids. And so all the kids from the school are going there and buying it. I called the owner of the store, and he said it's not illegal. I called the police department. They said it's not illegal. There's no nicotine. They can buy it. And what happens is it's right now left up to each municipality to regulate it in a hit-and-miss fashion. So all the kids knew they could go out to Grand Chute and buy this stuff. So now she's now 18. She can buy the nicotine stuff, which she is, and she's addicted. But I really think there needs to be a state law preventing the sale of the non-nicotine stuff, which is a excellent gateway for kids to get started. That's my comment.
Well, Becky, thank you so much for sharing your experience with this. John, what do you hear there?
So what I'm hearing is not new, unfortunately. I would call this sort of the Joe Camel effect, right? So we have seen this in the past with the marketing of cigarettes and the marketing of other products, that everybody that is the least bit objective and rational about it knows that it's a very deliberate approach to try to attract younger consumers and get them addicted to a product. And so we've seen that, you know, you had, you know, the blunt wrappers, the K2, different types of flavored alcohol drinks. It's clearly directed at creating another market for the future, and And it's something that I agree it should be an elevated concern that should, as a bare minimum, be discussed in terms of how you regulate and control the deliberate targeting of young kids with potentially harmful products. So I think it's a very legitimate concern, and it shouldn't be done. It never makes sense when you just leave it to the local municipalities on such a major issue. You know, I believe in local control on certain issues, but when you're up against a huge marketing push, whether legal or illegal, that's focused on vulnerable populations, then it requires, I think, a broader response.
Yeah, John from Eau Claire called, couldn't stay with us, but says that he teaches at an after-school program for middle schoolers and notices that they go out to vape right after school. And John's concerned that e-cigarettes are marketing to kids and that it could convince them to start smoking or use tobacco products later in life. So certainly we're seeing this across Wisconsin. We're catching up with Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, and we're discussing vaping and the challenges that are associated with trying to deal with the illegal aspects of this practice that some people have adopted. John, I do wonder, with this recent rash of lung injuries and the apparent role that THC has played with these products, has that changed your view on marijuana legalization in Wisconsin?
You know, I think that we have to have a very honest and very robust discussion that includes law enforcement and includes people from other states that have now legalized cannabis and have experience. You know, the thing that amazes me is that we tend to operate like we're in a bubble, and we know that Illinois has now legalized a certain amount of marijuana, Minnesota, Michigan. You're essentially creating a framework where you're going to have jurisdictions in surrounding states that have some form of either legalization or decriminalization, and it's going to create the same kind of dilemmas for law enforcement. And how are you going to be consistent about this? How are you going to apply the law in an equitable way across the board? So it's a very legitimate concern of mine, and that is that I just fundamentally believe that one way or the other, we are moving towards a process that will eventually de-emphasize criminal investigation and prosecution and move more towards a regulatory framework. I think we should learn from what other states, both good and bad, have experienced when they've gone through this process. And I'm working with groups in Wisconsin to as a minimum, let's hold a robust discussion. Bring in those experts, both public health experts, law enforcement, public schools, community development people who are looking at creating different forms of revenue for states and for individuals. Let's have that discussion and. Let's actually come up with a rational framework for addressing this problem instead of just waiting for bad things to happen and then reacting sometimes in ways that are more harmful than helpful.
John, thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you very much.
John Chisholm was the Milwaukee County District Attorney. He was first elected in 2006, and we've been talking about vaping and how challenging it is to get a hold of what's illegal and enforce the regulations. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.